You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
You know, I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
What's up, Bison fans? Welcome to this three-seat edition of the Bison Report podcast, brought to you by Fargo Basketball Academy and Shoot 360. Unscripted version. You guys may not even be able to know, and if that's the case, you might not be able to notice. If that's the case, we're doing our job well, but normally there is a script, there is a skeleton, there is a general direction that we take this show in, but wanted to address a question we got on Twitter. Wanted to kind of talk a little bit about this team, break down the bracket a little bit. There'll be like a Sioux Falls preview episode, or a Summit League preview episode, and Nate won't be in Sioux Falls, so not necessarily the live breakdown podcasts or immediate breakdown podcasts, from the hotel room across the street, but we'll probably, as long as they keep winning, we'll keep podding. So there'll be more NDSU hoops content moving forward. Let's dive though real quickly into the news. Carson Wentz was released by the Washington Commanders. So for the first time, quite a long time, he is a real free agent, which is interesting. Certainly, I think, having been traded twice, traded to Indianapolis and then traded back to Washington, he hasn't been able to pick his situation. I'm not saying that's going to solve everything. I'm a little bit worried about Carson physically. I don't think he's the same player that he was in 2017. 2017 seems like a long time ago. I know he's only 30. But it is tough to see an easy path for Carson to be a successful starting NFL quarterback again. It could happen. Crazier things have happened, but the path looks tough. Coach Phelps, Mr. Steve Phelps, Jeff Phelps was hired by Coach Entz. And it's odd because he was announced as the defensive tackles coach. Coach Nick Gazer will still coach the defensive line. But I just would have assumed that Phelps would have probably coached the DNs and Goose would have just gone back to D-Tacs, but maybe he had some fun with the DNs. I don't know. Maybe he enjoyed his time working with the DNs, but very much excited for that hire. Cody Morgan was a great coach, but Coach Phelps, man, last 3 years at Mississippi State has time with the Gophers, time with Washington State, obviously has a close relationship with, or had a close relationship with Coach Mike Leach. May he rest in peace, working for Leach in Washington State and obviously at Mississippi State as well. But a welcome, experienced, high-level addition to the Bison coaching staff in Jeff Phelps. So that rounds out the staff with Petrino having been added, Crutchley having been added at wide receiver, and Phelps having been added at D-tack. That'll kind of stem the tide there. You just won't have a defense. You won't have an oversight defensive coordinator, which is what Bronny was last year. David Braun did not coach a position last year, and they're just not going to do that this year. Jason Petrino will take the safeties. Lewis Walker will take the corners. Grant Olson will take the linebackers. And Phelps and Goose will coach the defensive line, however they choose to split it up. Sounds like Phelps with the D-tacks and potentially Goose with the D-ends. That's about it for big-time news in the Bison universe. I confirmed the Athletic report that Grant Nelson has declared for the NBA draft, which is just a crazy even sentence to say about a North Dakota State basketball player who hasn't exhausted his eligibility. But that's the fact, is Grant has declared for the draft, and we had his exclusive interview here on Bison Report Radio, and I really get the feeling, folks, I am less worried about him transferring and more worried about him just going into the NBA. He's a confident young man right now. He thinks he's going to get drafted, and he wants to go play in the NBA. And that would bring up some potential, I think, transfer portal possibilities for the Bison. I if it were me, Coach Richmond doesn't probably care very much what I think. If it were me, I would replace Grant Nelson with a transfer. You have how many true freshmen this year and two true freshmen next year in Eli Bradley and Derek Doucette? My humble, ever humble opinion is that they don't probably need another true freshman. I would probably just rock with a transfer of some sort, preferably a tall one that can shoot. But we'll attack that another day. This is what I want to attack now, Nate. Nate Zaster, everybody, by the way. Nate has woken up behind the curtain here. We are recording a little bit late. So Nate's alive. Nate's awake. How you doing, buddy?
We're doing well. It's been a long week, but Bison Hoops did what they needed to do, and it's time to make another run at this thing. I think we're happy with what they did after the start of their season and can only be excited for what this group's done. Obviously the Grant news, we kind of wish we could see him for another year with this group. That would be pretty amazing. But I think this group with how Grant's been consistent all year and the emergence of Bolden as a secondary scorer recently. I mean, they have two bucket getters who can go get some late in the game. And I think that's going to be huge for a run in Sioux Falls.
For sure. For sure. And like you even think about how they've looked this season without Nelson. They did not have Grant in their, probably what I would say, their most impressive win of the season, which was at Portland. And I would have to go back and look at, maybe it was home against South Dakota State. I don't know. I'd have to look at net rankings, whatever. But that Portland team's good. And I don't know that they had a better win than that one. And that was without Grant Nelson. And they're certainly, I am not going to get on this podcast and tell you they're a better basketball team without Grant Nelson. But what I will say is they certainly fit together in a more, I would call traditional NDSU style. If Hostreiter takes over that spot next year and you have two guards in Wheeler Thomas and Tajavis Miller really taking a step forward in year two, Bowden Skunberg being the leader of the team emotionally and probably scoring wise, Sam Hostreiter or potentially, a transfer in that four spot. And then Andrew Morgan really, only having to guard opposing centers kind of no matter what, and really being a primary, low block offensive. They could really play four around one, which whether you're talking about four men like Sam Griesel before he was a point guard, like AJ Jacobson, you can go kind of down the list of guys that they've had in that spot who are 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", could shoot it and wouldn't get killed defensively. The idea that their four man you know, needs to be a 7-foot guy shooting 25% from three. Now, that is about as mean as you could possibly describe Grant Nelson. He does a million other things, and there'd be a much better team without him or with him next year. But they fit together kind of in an interesting way without him. And that to me is an interesting, you know, potential look moving forward. Go ahead, Nate.
Yeah, I obviously Grant's a player that just the way he handles the ball and kind of can create his own shot for a guy his size. That's just something you can't replace, obviously. But Richmond has his program the way his program is, and sometimes he doesn't care what the media thinks or what his team thinks, or he doesn't really care what other people think. He's going to continue to run his program with his culture, and that's why his program continues to consistently win year in and year out.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so Nate, you talked about Richmond, you talked about his culture, you talked about his program. And I want to discuss, you know, his comments after the game, his attitude after the game. Excuse me, I was in the media room just talking to some other people kind of around the program, or media people, not anybody with the program, but just kind of a little bit shocked with his tone after the game, and just how annoyed he was, how unimpressed he was with that performance. And some fans noticed. I mean, the fans that are really tuned into the program noticed our tweets, or noticed the transcript, or noticed quotes in the paper, or noticed the YouTube video that flat out just goes up of the press conference. Maybe some of it was, you know, carried by 1660. I don't know. But it was very negative. I mean, very, very much angry about their second half performance and who they became in that second half. And so we got a question from MG Gully, and this is sort of the same vibe as all the other questions I got, whether it was Twitter, Facebook, text message, word of mouth conversation, whatever it was. I don't know. I go back and forth. Would you want to play for him, or would you want to be around him some days? And I get that. You know, I always thought that, sometimes Kyan Brown played good cop to Dave's bad cop. And you saw that, where if he sometimes had to be the hammer, maybe there's another coach on staff that was there that was a little bit softer. Now, I'm full disclosure. Like I would hope that Dave Richmond considers me a friend, and I consider him a friend. I mean, he and I are friendly. So, you know, and I also believe in him as a basketball coach. And I did when things were rough, you know, with the Kai Cabela situation. You and I are David Richmond fans. I think that's fair enough. Like, that's fair to say. We both have a personal relationship with him. We both believe in him as the leader of this program. With that said, I can understand how he rubs some people the wrong way. And now, in a world where if you maybe are coaching too hard, or were perceived to coach too hard, or you're not giving an 18, 19 year old kid the answers he wants right away, you have the transfer portal. And I think that scares people. I think that scares folks, you know, considering or fearing that, well, some kid's just going to get mad at Dave and leave. To that, I would say the only player that has really left that they've wanted to keep is Malik Harden-Hayes. And I think they would have kept Jarius Cook. Tyree Edey and Sam Griesel are gone, but though they went through senior day. I mean, they were not their scholarships had already been recruited, if that makes sense. I mean, they were replaced by, they were never planned on for this season. They were never, it was Rocky and Sam and Tyree, and then the next era of Bison basketball. Could this team have taken Sam Griesel? Yeah, this would have been a really interesting team with Sam Griesel. Go ahead. You got something to say?
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head. I mean, I have the ultimate respect for Dave, and I will never question his coaching style. Obviously, he has his coaching style, and I probably have mine. And I will say that when Saul was the coach, Saul was the laid-back guy keeping the team together, and Dave was the hard ass. I mean, he was the guy that when we had 6 a.m. individual workouts, we didn't want to see him with his hat coming around the corner to do our workout. We wanted someone else doing our workout. I mean, he was just that. But he also had the respect of everyone on that because he knew how to treat people and he knew how to coach and he knew what he was doing.
Okay, so I want you to listen to this. I don't mean to cut you off, but I want you to listen to this. This is former Packers interior offensive lineman Lucas Patrick talking about being publicly berated, like on TV by Aaron Rodgers, like being yelled at by Aaron Rodgers. And I want you to listen to this. It's about an emotional bank account. And I want you to listen to this.
The best way to describe this is everyone has an emotional bank account with people. Hopefully yours is, you know, quote unquote, has a lot of money. Like, I look at my emotional bank account with a lot of guys in this locker room. There's been a lot of deposits. And unfortunately, you guys don't get to see the deposits. And sometimes they're daily, sometimes they're weekly, sometimes it's one big one every 2 or 3 months. But most of the time, y'all see the withdrawals, which is okay. Because if you have somebody who's making deposits, whether it's, you know, big, small, incremental, or whatever, when they make the withdrawal, there's, you know, emotional credit to give out. So that's how I feel anytime he says or does anything. And, you know, that's how I feel with a lot of my teammates is I get what you're saying. It doesn't matter how it comes out because I know you as a person and I trust you as a person. So whatever you need to say to get out of me the correction or, you know, whatever happened in that moment, how it's communicated, that's okay with me. Because of prior deposits they've put into our friendship.
Nate, does that make sense to you and why I felt it was prudent to describe Richmond?
Yeah, and you put so much in and kind of gain that respect to have those moments. I guess my humble opinion is with all due respect to Richmond, without watching the film of that second half, the big thing we always said as coaches and even coaches said to players is it's never as good as you think it is and it's never as bad as you think it is. And maybe it was a full-on teaching moment for him and that's how he wanted to get his team to respond. And I didn't think you should see that at the end of the year. You just beat a team who would have taken the 3 seed if you lost. You won. It's the last home game of the regular season, and you're one and done conference tournament potentially, and you're gonna have a bunch of new players next year. I think there's a time and place. I think my humble opinion is he would have been better off watching the film over the weekend, and I'm sure they have a press conference this week, and then he could have maybe talked about it. But when you're a player, and I would imagine that locker room wasn't fun after the game after hearing his press conference, and they just won a huge game. So I think there's a time and place for everything, and I'm not questioning Richmond's coaching style or anything that he does within the program because he's doing it the right way. I was a little bit surprised that being that pissed off after a big win.
Yeah, and the other part of that little quote about an emotional bank account is, like, to me, I don't think people do see the deposits with coach, you know, kind of like what the way he speaks about Bowden Skunberg too. Like, people see Bowden talking and clapping and chirping. And I would guess that he is probably one of the least favorite players for opposing teams. In fact, I know he is, just having talked to some guys around the league. And you and I were a little bit annoyed with Brooks Allen from St. Thomas. And I was talking to one of the guys that, like, covers St. Thomas. He's like, Skunberg's way worse. Like, I don't know. But, you know, I also have a personal relationship with Bowden and his family. They're great people. But, like, their public persona, right, like Skunberg and Richmond, is all on the competitive floor, which is sometimes, as Dave said, like, when they're at their worst, people don't see – you know, like, Bowden, give my stepson a t-shirt. People don't see Dave, like taking the guys to Pelican Lake for a day and doing like a team building thing like that, which the NDSU social team caught and did some cool stuff. But like there are, you know, dinners at the Richmond House or bar. I mean, you've been around the program. Like there are, you are a part of this program for 365 days a year. And the public sees you 32 times for an hour and 40 minutes at a time. At Bison Report, we try to pull back the curtain a little bit, but just the time I have on my hands, the access we have, and I'm not complaining. Like, Wes is amazing. Dave is as good of a coach as I've ever worked with on a media side. But I think, unfortunately, people don't see the deposits. And there are coaches that are just a-holes. There are. For sure there are. And there are coaches that probably just put it on their assistants to make the quote-unquote deposits. Now, you're someone who played for him. It's my humble opinion, as someone who did not play for David Richmond, that he does make the deposits. He himself does make the deposits. And maybe I'm wrong on that, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but he does make the deposits so that he can make the withdrawals without just turning into a coach that players hate.
That is 100% fact. Richmond had the respect of any player that played in our program. And if they didn't, I don't know about it. You just said it right. I mean, he made the deposits and he was a coach that once you're outside of basketball and it's not really doing basketball activities, he's one of the most fun coaches to be around. But once you hit that floor, that practice floor, or that workout, he's no nonsense, and that's just how he is. And we knew that was his personality and how he was, and that's how we knew as players how we needed to act.
All right, let's dive into those two games, huh? Let's talk a little bit about. I thought St. Thomas. It was crazy, right? Because I came away from St. Thomas honestly, and I did not really. Because you were, I think, watching the game or covering the game. It was, I think, Christmas something. I had family around, whatever. I would like to in the future, hopefully, especially since my brother-in-law lives up there. I'd like to go to the game in St. Paul every year. I like the arena. They're getting a new arena. I'd like to go in St. Paul. I had plans last year to meet Nate Zastrow in St. Paul. Yet again, just, you know, nothing but disappointment. But I'd like to go to that game every year. Didn't go to the game. And honestly, I don't know that I've seen more than, I don't know, 10, 18 minutes of that game. You watched it, you recapped it, etc. I walked away from that game at St. Thomas going, how did NDSU ever lose to these guys in a 40 minute game? They were just so much better than St. Thomas, so much bigger, so much more athletic, so much more talented. And ultimately, you know, St. Thomas kind of makes it a game, but that was just a game that was dominated. They're very skilled, St. Thomas is. Outside of Rhodey, who, if you listen to the rumors, might not be there forever. But outside of Rhodey, they're little. And he is not a post, but he is appropriately sized for the position that he plays. Outside of him, they just aren't big enough. And that was the, you know, like you watch Parker Bjorklund just flopping around like a fish trying to draw fouls on Andrew Moore, which worked, by the way. But, man, if that game was officiated the right way, NDSU might have won by 25. I mean, they just absolutely beat the devil out of St. Thomas. What were your thoughts from the game on Thursday? I was definitely most impressed with the game on Thursday.
Yeah, I think we kind of saw that a little bit last year with St. Thomas where, you know, they were just kind of outmatched. And they're one of those teams that you absolutely hate playing because, you know, there's going to be games where refs are going to let them get away with that stuff and get calls. And unfortunately, usually Division I officials are able to adjust to that stuff. But you could just tell that NDSU had a size advantage. They had a strength advantage. They had any type of advantage when it came to that stuff. But St. Thomas, I mean, they play well together. They move the ball. They're unselfish. And I think you're right about the Rhodey kid. I think he's going to be one of the better players in the league if he stays another year. I don't think that's happening. But It was a big win. It was two big wins. And I know St. Thomas is technically still your Division III team, but they've beaten some teams this year. And they beat South Dakota State. I think that was South Dakota State's last loss. I think they've won like eight straight right now. And St. Thomas was their last loss. And definitely didn't expect – maybe we expected them to be a five seed or, this early, but they definitely have some talent, but I think it was more NDSU just kind of flexing its muscle a little bit and making – I thought they defended really well, especially in the second half, and kind of won that one a little bit comfortably. I don't think it really was ever within striking distance in that second half. I think we kind of held a 10-point lead for the majority of the game.
Yeah, I was really impressed with just the way that one went, and then – I thought maybe one of their best 20 minutes of the season was the first half against Western. Skunberg just ruined Massner. And Massner, man, if you're listening, kid, I there's about a 2% chance that Trenton Massner ever hears this, but that kid is just too good of a basketball player to act the way that he does. Constantly whining to officials, kick the media table where the photographers sit on the North End. I was very unimpressed with just the way he handled himself. And it maybe he's having a bad day. We all have bad days, but just an amazing, amazing basketball player for the Summit League level. And I walked away from that going, boy, I'm not impressed with this kid. And it had nothing to do with his ability to put the orange ball through the orange hoop, as Coach Richmond would say. So that is the last that I'll say about that. I just was not impressed with Trenton. Not really impressed with Rosner. He didn't do much. But riddle me this one. I kind of asked Bowden about it. Why go to Damari? And not that Damari played poor defense, because he didn't. He was up in him. But why not just kind of choke the life out of that team by keeping Skunberg on Massner? Is that a saving Bowden for offense thing, or
I think that's what I didn't get that. I don't know if I forget if it happened when Western, before they started coming back, or we were still kind of pounding them and then they'd made the change. Or was it the start of the second half?
Yeah, I don't remember seeing a ton. I saw some Jakari until he had that turnover that it seemed to get got banished to the Shadow Realm. I think it was something like that. But there, I will say, there was not a ton of Bowden on Massner in the second half, period. There just wasn't.
Yeah, and I think part of it could be an offensive thing. Part of it could be playing a little bit of games with Massner, just giving him a different matchup. I mean, maybe you don't want him to get used to or trying to find a way to learn how to score on a certain player. And then you got Bowden, who's big and strong, going to be physical. And then you got Damari, who's a quick little water bug guy who's going to follow you everywhere you go, who you evidence size advantage against. I think it might've been just giving him a different look, but that when that look wasn't exactly working, I'm surprised they didn't go back to Bowden sooner.
Right.
But by that point, they might've needed his off. I think they needed Bowden's offense.
Yeah. And that was the thing. It was like, Damari was not out of position, but Masner's a big point guard, big, long. And Damari was all up in his kitchen, but like, okay, shoot it over me. And Masner's like, okay, I will shoot it over you and it will go in. Like, I do not have a problem with this. And that was kind of the issue there. But second half, ball control, especially in a situation where I know they don't have Yoder, but my God, this is a team that we thought had four or five ball handlers. Waddles, Jakari, DWT, Tejavis. Like the selling point of this team was, you know, late in games, they're going to be able to break a press because everyone can dribble. It's not, you know, a situation where you're uncomfortable with three-fifths of the guys on the floor, you know, trying to break a press, because Nelson is actually really effective man, they started throwing the ball over the yard. Western got a little bit of that comeback whistle, you know, where you knock into a guy in the backcourt and they could, I don't know if it's intentional or not, but ultimately, I'm not going to blame that one on the officials. I'm going to honestly do what Dave did, and I'm going to blame that one on the Bison. And I think they took it upon themselves too. But I think potentially a big moment. You know, I don't know how Sioux Falls is going to go. You know, if it was my guess, I'd say they win their first game. I think they're more talented than South Dakota State. I think they'll lose to Oral Roberts Tuesday night. That's what I think. And I don't, you know, just imagining sitting in a press conference after the championship game, waiting for Paul Mills after they lost after an undefeated season, and what that would be like, and how fast I would be thrown out of that press conference. No, in all seriousness, though, I think if this is going to be Bowden's team next year, and I think it is, by the way, little birdie, might be Bowden's team for the next 2 years. Just saying. Just saying. That freshman year during the COVID season doesn't technically count. Just saying. Anyway, I think that was a big shot. Because if you're Bowden Scunberg, you're asking yourself, can I be him? And that was a him shot. And Grant Nelson could be playing for the Chicago Bulls this time next year, in which case I'll probably be moving in with Nate and commuting to Chicago Bulls games to watch Grant Nelson. But that was maybe a him moment for Bowden Scunberg. And I think the next 2 years, three if this team, even in the transport era stays together. But boy, the next 2 years, with the turnover that's expected at South Dakota State over the next 2 years and Oral Roberts over the next 1 year, it's going to be a special time for Bison basketball coming up. But let's talk about let's wrap up. We're a little bit in, and we'll go very briefly here, Nate, because I do want to do a Summit League preview. I think it's one of the best mid-major tournaments in the world, and I think it deserves its own respect with the show. And you and I, you know, we believe in this team. Like I said, I think it's a Tuesday night team again. I'm not impressed with the offensive skill of South Dakota State. I think NDSU should have won that game in Brookings, and I think that they had a better handle on that game in Fargo than even the final. They just have so many more guys. Like, Mayo is great, but after that, boy, very few people who can create their own shot, and some folks who just can't hit an open shot. But hey, they got the 2 seed, not NDSU. So I'll certainly do respect to the Rabbits. I just think from a matchup perspective, you know, if Javis is going, or if Morgan is going, if they can get to Javis or Morgan going, Scunberg and Nelson are borderline automatic at this point. And that just becomes where Mayo is trying to beat four guys. Or you're really asking for a big night from Dentlinger. I don't know. Anyway, we're getting too far and too deep into the weeds there. All right, Nate, talk to me about this bracket. I'll break it down for everybody really quick. On Friday, the 8th seed Denver will take on the 9th seed, the University of North Dakota. And then on Friday, UMKC will take on number 10, Omaha. You're going to play for the right to play South Dakota State. Denver and UND are going to play for the right to play Oral Roberts. And the unfortunate thing is that it's our understanding that Shamari Allen is not going to play any more basketball this year. Not a ton of coverage around UMKC basketball, so it's hard to necessarily. I'm trying to look it up on Twitter. That's why my words aren't coming out really well. We need one more R in Shamari. Okay. February 25th, Jay Elson, Idco Sports. Jay's as solid as it gets in the Summit League. Shamari Allen broke his arm against UND and will miss the rest of the season. So that sucks for them.
And they got swept by UND.
Yeah, and the league, because Shamari Allen and Raquanis Mitchell, in a game where the Achiuwa brothers play well, that's an interesting little matchup there in the 2-7 with South Dakota State. If those two guards get going, Raquanis Mitchell trying to beat South Dakota State by himself is less interesting to me. So Saturday, you've got Oral Roberts against the winner of that game against, South Dakota State against the winner of UMKC Omaha. Sunday, 4-5 game will be Western Illinois against St. Thomas, the two teams NASU just beat. Winner of that contest will take on likely Oral Roberts. And then NDSU on Sunday after the Western St. Thomas game will take on USD, a team that they split with, by the way, and a team that they were not super competitive with in Verne. Now, they didn't have Damari Wheeler Thomas or Luke Yoder in that game. And that I think is, I wouldn't say you throw the game out the window, but it's tough. But the Oats have guys. Comateros is tough on the pick and pop. Perel Hunt can get his own shot. And even this kind of more diminished version of AJ Plitzewhite that we have now, still a really, really, really smart basketball player. So they're an interesting matchup. You know, I think NDSU will play at least on Monday, but I'd certainly like to be in that two seed where South Dakota State is. I'd have liked to win that game in Brookings and maybe have the Jacks lose, you know, one more contest, as they did win a lot of close games this year. Credit to Coach Henderson and South Dakota State. They won a lot of close games, but man, I'd rather be playing one of those four play-in teams than staring down these Yotes.
Yeah, I think USD kind of, I would say, underachieved a little bit this year.
They are falling apart currently. I will say that. They are falling apart right now.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they had the personnel to compete for possibly a league title. We knew bench depth was going to be continue to be an issue for them. But, I mean, Paul Bruns was one of the better players last year in the league as a freshman and comes off the bench for them. I mean, that means your roster is pretty good. You got Plitzelite, who's, coming off a major knee injury, but was still a very, all-league player when he was playing. Cruz Perot Hunt and Archambault have been there a while. I think they still have the personnel to possibly be the sleeper team in the Summit League. Now, I understand that you're saying they fall apart, or they have been falling apart, and I don't disagree at all. Anything can happen in March. All it takes is one to get rolling, and they are in the state of South Dakota, which makes things even more interesting. I know that the fans in Verm don't quite fill it up like the South Dakota State fans, but they usually have a good crowd at those games. So, I mean, it's going to be somewhat of a road game for NDSU, and they did not play well at USD, and that was probably one of their kind of more frustrating games because they had just started rolling, I think, a little bit, and USD just lost to Oral Roberts who by 50, and it was like their fourth game in 8 days or something like that. So I think that game at least has NDSU's attention. And you brought up the press stuff with the Western Illinois game, and I don't mean to bring back old stuff here, but that can be treated as a learning thing for this young team. I don't know that they've been up late like that where teams need to press and foul. It just doesn't pop in my mind with a team pressing. Maybe they just handled it so easily in those other games that you don't really think about it. But that's a thing. I think it was Greg Steeman on the broadcast mentioned, you know, Richmond was pretty ticked off in his interview after the game, but said that that's a big learning thing for a young team going into Sioux Falls. Like they're not going to, because if you let that happen in Sioux Falls, your season could be over. So I think it was a good learning thing for that team where you need to find things or little things to clean up before Sioux Falls.
Yeah. I'd be interested too. Coach has never been a invitational tournament guy outside of the NCAA or the NIT, and they've never been invited to the NIT because when NDSU wins the regular season, they just win. They win the tournament. So they don't have the rich NIT history of South Dakota State. I wonder if 2-3 more games with this group wouldn't be helpful. Even if Grant sits, whatever. And maybe he wants to put more on film for NBA teams. I don't know. But, like, even if Grant sits, I wonder if, you know, they don't lose in a valiant way, to Oral Roberts in a championship game if there isn't a CBI or a CIT or, I don't know, Barstool Invitational or Vegas 16. I don't know what the rest of these tournaments look like, but maybe get another chance to see these guys if things don't go their way. But I wouldn't count them out. I'll never count out David Richmond in Sioux Falls. I will say that. I'll never count out the Bison down there every year. Not every year, but you know, many years go down there a little bit nervous. There we are Tuesday night preparing for a championship game. They've been there in the last 5 years. I don't know if folks expected it at 2-13 or at 3-13 or whatever they were to be there. But I don't know. We'll see. All right, Nate. Thank you, my man, for your time this evening. Thank you, wonderful people, for listening. Thanks to Fargo Basketball Academy and Tundra Insurance. Have a great week, everybody. And go Bison.